Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and this is a harvest and cellar update as we embark on our harvest journey. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We missed an episode last week. We were bottling and we rolled right into harvest literally yesterday as I'm recording this. On August 19th, we brought in our first few grapes. It is now the 20th. And if you're listening to this, it's probably August 21st or beyond, somewhere thereabouts. And we're going to talk about all that kind of stuff between bottling, kind of the expectations therein of some of the 2022s that were going into bottle, the joys of bottling, once again, we were blessed by. And then, of course, what we're looking forward to this 2023 harvest. This is basically going to be the, like, August, for lack of a better turn of phrase, like, wrap-up episode. Like, we're not wrapping up the month. But when you get to mid-August like this, into late August, you better have your ducks in a row when it comes to the wine industry, because you got a lot of stuff coming down the pipeline to make sure that you can be successful for the harvest season. So we're going to kind of get into what that means for a wine business. All right. Before we do just that, please be sure to like, subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you're listening or viewing your podcasts. You can always catch the video version of this and watch me dance around in my office at home, on YouTube, on any of our social networks. As a matter of fact, we are at MTGA Wines. That's YouTube and Instagram where we are the most active. We're also on the Book of Face, as well as the social network formerly known as Twitter. You can find us there. Be sure to check out our website, mtgawines.com. You can find out a little bit more about us. You can also scroll down on that homepage a little ways, and you will see a little like email form kind of thing. If you would like to submit any questions to be answered here on the show, you can head to our website, fill that out, send it our way, and we will try and feature them in our Q&A episodes that we do at the end of every month. As it turns out, the next Q&A will be in 1 week's time on August 28th. So get your questions in. We've already have some amazing topics to cover, and we are very excited to continue that trend. I think that's all the announcements that I have. I think we can just get into it from here. Thank you all again, as we missed an episode last week. This is kind of that time of year where that might happen. I'm going to try and continue doing this on a weekly basis. I'm going to try and have a couple of episodes like kind of banked and like pre-recorded so that you all don't miss out on anything, or we can stick to kind of the routine every Wednesday of releasing these episodes. But when you have a bottling run and then literally a day later getting ready for harvest, things get a little bit hectic. I had a lot of other stuff on my mind, as you might imagine, and that's why we ended up skipping last week's episode. I had actually, speaking of pre-recording stuff, I had an episode in the chamber like ready to go, but I'm gonna post it in a couple of weeks. It's going to be something that's kind of more about the transparency of the wine industry and why we don't kind of share things or talk about things amongst people. It's a little bit of a feisty episode. Just wasn't the vibe for last week. I felt like as we were getting ready for harvest and for bottling, and frankly, I was stressed out enough. I didn't want to dive into another feisty topic and have that posted up. I wanted it to just be like, I'd rather let that sit and make sure I'm happy with it before I actually post something that's a little bit soapboxy out there. So we're going to get into that. This episode, as we mentioned at the top, we're going to get into kind of the joys that we've experienced over the last couple of weeks between kind of wrapping up some wines and then starting right away again with a brand new batch of wines coming in. For those of you that want a little bit more background on the 2022 vintage, as well as bottling, kind of what that means for wineries and why it is arguably the most frustrating thing we deal with in this industry outside of compliance and like licensing and stuff, we have a couple episodes on those. We did a little bit of a 2022 retrospective earlier in the year. We'll provide some kind of better updates on it right now, or coming here shortly. And then we did do a bottling is the best quote and quote episode. I believe that was some point last year. It might have been about this time last year that we did that episode. But feel free to check those out if you'd like a little bit more information and kind of a little bit of background on where this episode is going to go. So I guess we'll start at the very beginning. 2 weeks ago, or actually almost a month ago now, we posted our blending session video. Be sure to check that one out as well if you really want some insight into how a wine is actually kind of put together before bottling. But over the last 2 weeks, it was time to put those blends together and actually get them in the bottle. Now, I've talked about this, you know, pretty decently on the show previously, so I'm not going to get too far into it. But bottling, for those that aren't aware, is in fact my least favorite thing, second least favorite thing in the wine industry. That whole compliance and licensing thing is an even bigger rat's nest, something that we will probably get into in another episode. But it is just, that's a lot to unpack. But for bottling purposes, and even talking to my buddy Chris, shout out to Chris and Ultima Bottling. They're the mobile bottling line that we work with. I've been working with Chris now, kind of the operator of the truck, for years. I love working with him. He's a true professional, gets the job done quickly, efficiently, and as best as he can, even when I throw a lot of nonsense his way. And we'll get into some of that as we go through this episode. And we talked about this even the morning before we got started, is that winemakers hate bottling. And the reason is because it is just a logistical nightmare. For some reason, no matter how much planning and forethought and work you put into your wines, you're gonna have problems. There's just too many moving parts. There's too many logistics. There's too many vendors you're dealing with. There's just going to be problems. And there is always something. There is always something. There are bottling runs that are certainly better than others that go relatively smoothly. And I mean that word relatively very, very seriously. There are also others that are complete train wrecks. I had a very good friend of mine go through one of those train wreck bottling runs about a week before I did. Luckily, ours was less challenging. Still not great, but, you know, we got through it. We got through it. So luckily, the preparation for it and getting ready for a bottling run is really not too bad. It's a lot of admin, a lot of desk time. You're making phone calls. You're ordering everything from your glass bottles to your corks. You got to print labels out. You got to go through somebody for that. We order a bunch of nitrogen gas and liquid nitrogen for the bottling truck so we can sparge the bottle. So there's not a lot of air in those bottles when it comes time for bottling. We have the bottling truck itself, their team and all their equipment. And then, of course, you have foils, the little capsules that go on the bottles. And then last but certainly not least, you have us, the glorious winemakers who are ready to put these wines to bed and be done with them and send them off into the world. And we control it as best as we can. You know, luckily doing the work, and actually I'll give you like a little bit of the timeline. This was the Saturday before bottling. We were bottling a week ago on the 14th of August. So if you're listening to this later, the timeline's not going to make exact sense, but the 14th of August is when it actually happened. 1 week from the release of this show, I should say. All right. And that meant the week leading up to that, we're making sure that all of our blends are solid. We're bringing wines up to tank, which means all the individual barrels and lots that we have in the cellar, we're moving them out of those containers and into a larger vessel so that we can create those blends and actually taste them in their glory, I guess, you know, when they're actually finally all put together. Typically, that happens over the course of a couple of days. I had one of our great friends and someone who very foolishly volunteers some of his time to help us out in the cellar, Mr. Ben, the assistant to the assistant winemaker, helped me out for about 6-7 hours during one day to get about half of that work done. I got everything kind of cleaned and tidy up the following day to get ready for the second half, at which time we had to filter all of those wines, which takes just extra time. Again, there's another kind of layer of complexity. You have to work with a company to rent a filtration system, or if you have your own, good for you. We rent ours. And from there, the wines are in essence ready to go. They are in tank. The final blends are complete. This is a very important time for me personally, is that the day before bottling or the evening before bottling, I go out to the winery. I try to do it when no one else is there because I want to sit there and I want to taste through all the wines we're bottling on my own, by myself, with no distractions, and just be sure, double check, triple check, quadruple check, that they are in fact where I want them to be. It's kind of like my own little Zen moment in winemaking before the chaos unfolds. It's, you know, a couple of days of heavy lifting, some pretty long days leading up to the actual bottling run. I was dog tired and sore and just all. And like, I like to think I'm fairly fit, been hitting the gym a lot more this year. And man, I came home, I came home and was sore, tired, all the things for basically the last 2 weeks as we're just moving barrels around, as we're moving pallets around, as we're doing all this stuff. It's just a lot of hard manual labor. It feels so good. It's just a lot. It's just a lot. You know, no harm, no foul there. It just is what it is. So taste through all the wines and they were delicious. 2022, kind of my perspective on it. A lot of what we did, and we've talked about this a little bit, but just in case anyone's new here, 2022 was a great year until it wasn't. We had a really nice growing season leading up into September, at which time we had a crazy heat spike where it was like 115 degrees for like 5 days straight. Very uncommon here. It's not uncommon for us to hit the triple digits for a couple of days, maybe 3 days, and then it normally tapers off and maybe it's mid to high 90s or low 90s, but there's kind of this like bell curve of temperature swings, and it's typically the highs only last for a couple of days. To see 5 days straight above 110 was a bit much. And then on either side of that, you're still talking high 90s to, you know, the triple digit range. It was cooking out here. And we opted to wait through that heat to pick the vast majority of our fruit because the grapes just weren't ready. And luckily, the vineyards we were working with had enough water to irrigate and try and keep them, you know, keep everything as healthy as we possibly could. But it created a lot of challenges for a lot of people. Some people had to pick before that heat. Some people picked during it. We opted and were able to pick some of our fruit like right afterwards, as you know, soon as things would kind of rehydrate out in the vineyard a little bit, try to give that a little bit of time, and then maybe in the coming weeks after that. The resulting wines, and you're going to find this across the board in Napa from 2022, you know, outside of some exceptions, will be, you know, higher octane wines. The alcohol percentages are going to be up a little bit. That is true of our wines, certainly, because that hot heat created some dehydration. There's higher sugar content, which converts to alcohol. So higher sugar equals more alcohol. Easy math. So there are going to be some higher octane wines. That can be challenging in that the wines can be hot, and that's kind of our technical term, I guess, is that when you kind of feel the alcohol burn a little bit, we say that wine's a little bit hot, there's some heat to it. And you might feel that on some wines coming from Napa. Sometimes it's a really nice component, you know, it can be something that adds complexity. It can feel a little out of balance at times as well. It's not necessarily a desired characteristic. We much prefer our wines to be a little silkier, a little smoother, and kind of not have those rough edges. But in hot years like that, with big heat spikes, and you have these higher octane wines, it's gonna happen. And really, there's not a lot of ways you can avoid it, unless you're, you know, there's not really a lot of ways you can avoid it. That's pretty much how it is. There are kind of ways you can help mask that characteristic, a lot like masking acidity and things with a little bit of sugar in the wine. We ferment our wines totally dry with no residual sugar, so that's not an option for us. We're not going to use any additives to try and, you know, remove that or to mask it. We're also not going to RO our wines, which is reverse osmosis. For those that don't know, you can use reverse osmosis to remove alcohol. You can de-alcohol wines. Now, this is actually something that is famously done by Dunn Vineyards up on Howe Mountain. Randy Dunn's been doing that forever. For the longest time, he is considered wines over 14% alcohol to technically be flawed. Somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but he's pretty damn serious about it, because those Dunn wines, if they have historically have been over 14%, they will reverse osmosis them back down until they are below 14%. Get to like 13.9 and change. I don't know how his son Mike feels about that. I haven't had a chance to chat with him and see if that's going to be something that continues down the line, but that is certainly an option. My problem with doing something like that is that, in my experience, it's flattened out the wine a little bit. You lose a little bit of complexity. So I would almost have the wine be fuller and more complex. And if there's a little bit of heat, so be it. Them is just the ropes. You know, that's my own personal take. I also, that it seems like kind of a harsh process. It's an extra process to go through. I don't want to do that. You know, I try to be as hands-off as I can in my winemaking. And sometimes I just want the vintage to speak for the vintage. And truth be told, I am happy with where the wines are. They are a little bit of a departure of what I've typically made in the past, but they're a different chapter in the same book, which is something that I still appreciate. So that's kind of the gist of where like 2022 has ended up for many people, including ourselves. Now, the bottling day itself. I mean, My goodness. Where to start? The first wine was actually... the first wine wasn't necessarily the biggest problem. The first wine that we make, it is a label that is... we're starting to produce a second label. And it's going to be a wine that probably ends up, hopefully, in some more restaurants, like retail shops. We're trying to kind of dip our toe into that pool a little bit more. It's a little bit more affordably made, so that way it can be a little bit more affordable on a store shelf or in a restaurant. And that's the one wine that we do filter outside of our whites. It is a Cabernet that we are producing under this new label. And we do filter it. The reason is we don't want you to have a lot of sediment in that bottle. We want less bottle variation. We want it to be much more consistent and a lot more stable for, you know, being trucked and transported all around the country and being stored on store shelves and in restaurant cellars and all this other stuff. So, we want to make sure it's kind of as clean and tidy as possible. Luckily, it doesn't have a huge amount of impact on the wine. It kind of softens it up a little bit. Dumbs it down a little bit. It's a tad less complex than if we were to just go straight to bottle with it. But, you know, it's not a big enough difference that I'm unhappy with the overall taste. It's rare that we do these kind of filtering procedures. It's something that I'm doing kind of out of caution for this wine, not because there are any like overt issues with it, but I don't want there to be. This is very much a preventative medicine kind of thing. So that was the wine that we bottled first. It actually goes through another filtration process as it goes into the bottling truck. It turns out that this particular wine had a fair amount of dissolved solids in it. There was a fairly high turbidity in there, which means there's stuff in the wine that was clogging that filter. So we had to slow down to a crawl. And we were maybe like, we must have been like 8 to 10 cases. 8 to 10 cases before like being done with the entire lot and the filter clogged. And quite frankly, and those filters that are on the truck, it was going to cost us another $310 to do that. So we're going to double down on the filters. And for 10 cases, I'm like, I'm not paying $300 for these 10 cases. Like if we're going to try and keep these costs low, I can't do that. So this is going to become topping wine. It's not even going to make it into this final wine, which kind of sucks. But now we have extra topping wine in the cellar. It's actually a 2023 Cabernet that we bottled up. So there's still stuff that we can use it for blending purpose-wise because, you know, you're talking about, a third of a barrel or so in terms of volume. So we can put that into kegs and use it for something, hopefully. You know, we're kind of making this up as we go with this particular project because it's new, it's different, and it's been a lot of fun, but challenging to say the least. And we definitely did not get all the work done that we wanted to because it clogged the damn filter. Even after we did a pre-filter to make sure that it was not supposed to do that. We did that 2 days beforehand. Shouldn't have been a problem. Guess what? It was a problem. So there's always something. So that caused the line to slow down. It kind of delayed us for some of the day. But realistically, we got through most of that lot. I wasn't too unhappy with it. I wasn't about to, you know, make some exceptions here and like, let's bottle it anyway without the filter. Like, we're not doing that. It was just like, let's skip over the last little bit of it. Let's get on to the next thing and keep this moving because I've got this truck for one day. If I delay things too much, I'm going to have to pay these folks a lot of overtime for all the equipment, all the people. There's 6 people on this truck that were putting this all together for us. It's expensive to do. You know, I'm paying all these bottling bills right now, as a matter of fact. So we got to get her done. We can't, no time to waste. We got to get going. So on to the next wines we went. Now, the next few wines actually went pretty well. They were going pretty solid. Now, these few wines, they technically kind of go through a filter, but not really. It's what we call a bug catcher, which is in essence a stainless steel, like mesh, fine mesh screen. It's just to get out like heavy solids, like any big sediment particles, stuff that's like actually like a sediment almost rather than being just like in solution in the wine. And the next few wines go through that basically with no issue. It's very light-handed. It doesn't cause a lot of issues. The flavor of the wines really aren't affected by it. So this is something that was just kind of our standard practice, you know, to go through this like mesh screen just to like filter out heavy sediment and stuff like that. Guess what? We got like, how many wines did we do? We did one, two, three, four. And on the, maybe it was the fourth wine. It was either the fourth or fifth wine, fifth or sixth wine of the day, but like out of the next few, it clogged the mesh screen, which means there's a bunch of sediment at the bottom of that tank somewhere. And it was just being pulled into the hose, gunking up the line and coming everything to the crawl. So we're like, okay, if that happens once, fine. It's going to take us 10 minutes. We got to stop everything, take apart the filter, clean it all out, and, you know, reset everything and get going again. So we do that. 5 minutes later, it clogs again. And I'm like, what? And normally I'm pretty good about this. Not in 15 years of winemaking, I've never had that happen once. It happened twice on the same day. In fact, it happened three times on the same day between the heavier filter we did for the first wine and then this mesh screen. Three times I clogged filters on this bottling run. It's never happened to me before. That's never been a problem. I don't know why it was a problem this time. And typically, you know, as to help like prevent this, even for wines of ours that we don't do any like fining or filtering on, which is the overwhelming majority of them, we rack them on a regular basis, which means we pump the wine out of the barrels. Whatever like heavy sediment or any solids that are in there stay at the bottom because we have a little device that kind of floats above the bottom of the barrel. And it allows us to remove that sediment so we don't have these kinds of issues when we go to a bottle of wine that's unfiltered. It's never been a problem. Our standard, like our MO has been consistent for 15 years and it has worked up until last week. So it clogs again, which means the line goes down again, which means there's still wine in the tank, which I'm going to have to deal with later. And same kind of problem applies. Like, we got a lot of work to get done. I can't, if this clogged in 5 minutes, it's going to clog in 5 minutes again. I can't risk that because it's going to take too much time to stop, reset, do everything all over again. So let's just keep moving forward. Whatever's left, I can hand bottle it. I have all the supplies left to hand bottle it. We're again within about a, you know, 10 case range of, you know, wine that needs to go to bottle. I can do that by hand tomorrow, but today we just got to get everything else done. We've got like 800 cases to bottle. It's not a huge run, but it's a full day. We got to get through these 800 cases. So we're at about the halfway point. At that point, we're actually closer to about 2/3 of the way through. We're looking pretty good at that point, but we needed to skip over that next wine because it was just going to take too damn long. Now, the wines after that posed a little bit of a challenge because it was for some clients of ours, not going into the MTGA label, but for other clients that we were making wine for. And it was challenging in its own right because these clients had, luckily they were using the same bottle shape. We were going into shiners, so no labels or foils or anything, so just a clean bottle. The issue was that each client had different corks and they were different sizes, which poses a challenge because if you're going to try and like split up a lot, like 50-50 between two people, like this situation, you have to like switch out the corks somewhere like in the middle, which can be tough to do kind of on the fly, especially when they're different sizes. For those, and this is kind of an interesting fun fact about bottling, is that, and this should make sense, is that the bigger the cork you use, the less volume of wine you can actually fit in that bottle. Go figure, right? So typically your bottles, I don't even know like what the average cork size is. I know what we've been using for years, which is a 49 millimeter cork. That's what we've been using for everything. I don't even know why I use 49 millimeter, to be honest, but that's what I started using forever ago. They're like nice. They're like a good size. They're not too big. Like once you get to like 54 or like 55 millimeter corks, like you're like, oh yeah, the fill level is going to be like below 750 milliliters. Like it's not even technically a full bottle of wine. You're a couple milliliters off because the cork is just so damn long. So I didn't even think about that personally, but I'm like, all right, well at like 49 millimeters, like that's pretty good. The other client actually had 45 millimeters. So if you end up with that wine, I guess you're getting an extra 4 milliliters per bottle. Good on you. But switching that in between means you got to change that fill height because it's done automatically. And you can program it to be like, hey, you got to be X amount of space between the wine and the cork, right? Because there's that little like gap, right? And you can dial that in. But if you have one cork that's longer and then you switch to a cork that's shorter, that gap gets bigger, right? Which means that wine could theoretically like oxidize faster, have more problems. You know, there's more, that cork could dry out quicker. You could have issues, I suppose, right? And if you switch from the shorter cork to the bigger cork, now maybe you shrink that space too much. So the cork is like right up against the wine, or God forbid it goes too far in and into the wine. You have wine starts squirting out the top because the cork went too far in and pressurizes it, or maybe the bottle breaks or whatever. I don't know. Like it's just tedious to make those switches. And this is where my buddy Chris on the truck was a fucking champion. Man made those switches happen on a dime. We just made sure we had to literally hand count all of the corks out to make sure that we kind of knew where the cut was going to be, because we knew we had a really good, you know, idea of how much wine for three lots was going to get bottled. But there's always a little bit of wiggle room because like some barrels are a little bigger than others. So you figure they're all about 59 to 60 gallons, but there's always that like little margin of error. So we try and split it up as best we can to make sure that we've got the corks all lined up. So we have six different batches of corks. That way, when we're done with one, we roll into the next. Then we switch wines, use one cork set of corks, then another set of corks, then switch wines again, use this one set of corks, and then another set of corks, and then switch wines for the last time. Wait. That was one too many. You know, you get the point. Whatever. You get the point. And that was tough. Even Chris, it was so funny. He's like, if you guys do this again, I'm going to call the bottling police. This is crazy. And I'm like, yeah, well, here we are. It was fine. It all worked out. That all worked out. But it was tedious. It was just tedious stuff. And we're running around with like chickens with our head cut off trying to like make all this happen. I'm barking orders at the HBIC. I feel so bad for her during the bottling days because it's like you're the general and you're on the battlefield and you're just pointing directions, delegating, trying to make sure shit gets taken care of because you don't have time to think. You just got to do, you know what I mean? And then after that, we had one last lot to bottle that was just going all into Shiners. Very quick, very easy. Took us like 20 minutes or something like that. It was super simple. And then the bottling run was done. And then we got everything trucked off to the warehouses. Everything is in temperature controlled cellars now. And getting ready for its air, just continuing its aging process, and eventually these wines will be released. Man, it was a lot. It was a lot. I was gonna say, like, I didn't want to spend like 2/3 of this episode talking about bottling, but I don't think I've really given you guys like a really like good point of view of like what happens over the course of like a day of bottling, and that's basically it. You know, in between each wine, I'm having to, you know, gas the line with nitrogen. We sparge it to kind of push the last little bit of wine through and make sure not too much air gets in there. On top of that, we're switching, like we're moving hoses and pumps and stuff around so we can go from one tank to the next to the next to the next. You know, I'm driving a forklift around, making sure that glass keeps getting out of the truck, making sure that I'm stacking pallets. It was going to be a warm day, so we were stacking all our pallets in the shade as best we could. You know, just all the, it's just a madhouse of logistics happening, and I'm so glad it's over. I'm so glad. Like every time a bottling run finishes, I'm like, thank God that we don't have to do that for another 6 months, because that was terrible. So, which, speaking of which, right now I get to start, basically come September, I get to start planning my next bottling run in late February, which is like, oh, we just got done with this, why do I have to do it again? Ugh, brother. Such is life, the trials and tribulations of winemaking. But we did all of that work last week on the 14th of August so that we could prepare for harvest. Because as it turns out, we had grapes that were ready to come in. So shortly after this bottling was done and we got all the wines trucked off to where they're going to be stored, it was time to go check on some grapes. And we had some white wine that was right on the cusp of being ready. Which meant it's time for me to go conduct a vineyard walk, take some samples, see where the numbers are at, taste some grapes, kind of see where the flavors are at, crush a bunch of clusters up, see what the juice tastes like, which means I got to drive about 2 hours out towards Sacramento to Clarksburg, where we get some of our white wines and walk through that vineyard. So a little bit of window time on Friday after we got through all the kind of bottling logistics. At that point, it was like, oh yeah, this is ready to go. The numbers look good. The flavors look amazing. Look at me. It's like the first like half day of harvest. I'm already like, my brain's all over the place. We tasted the flavors and everything was right where I would want it to be, for this first batch of white wine. It's a small lot. It's like 2 tons of fruit. It's basically enough to test all of the equipment to make sure it works, dust things off a little bit. That's kind of what this first batch of grapes always is for us. It's like, let's just get our sea legs again and make sure that we're ready for harvest. So it was ready. We called the pick. Initially, I was like, hey, if we can do it as early as Monday, let's bring it in. You know, Tuesday would work as well. And sure enough, it was ready yesterday, August 19th. So that meant the HBIC and I trucked our way all the way out to Clarksburg. Picked up these 2 tons. We borrowed a pickup truck and used my good old trusty Dodge and trucked those couple of tons back. It ended up being like 1.96 tons of grapes, all said and done. All of those went immediately into the press. We pressed that juice into a combination of both neutral oak and some stainless steel barrels. It'll end up being close to about a 50-50 ratio between neutral oak and stainless steel. There is actually a new oak barrel that, this is fun, hasn't been delivered yet. It was supposed to get delivered weeks ago. It's not here yet. Because our barrel supplier is going through shipping and logistics issues. So that's another thing. So we were short one barrel, which in reality of things is not too crazy. Like, that's fine. I'll take that. If that's the only thing I got to worry about, I'll take that. Luckily, we had an extra stainless steel barrel laying around. So I was like, all right, we'll use that. Put it into the mix. Let's get after it. So we have 6 barrels. They're all about 3/4 full, give or take, because as these fermentations go, it expands and they bubble and do a whole lot of things. So if you fill them too much, they make a glorious mess. Some of these are probably a little bit more than that. They're going to make a glorious mess anyway. Typically, like 2/3 full is pretty good. I might have overfilled a couple of them. So we'll see how much of a mess we make in the cellar. We got all those fermentations fired up. They are just starting to bubble as of the morning of the 20th. We crush and start fermenting immediately, pretty much. So we really get going with these barrel fermentations. Since we don't have a really efficient way to chill down this white wine juice, I don't want to let it sit any longer than it has to. So I'm a huge proponent of just getting those fermentations rolling before any bigger issues come along. I don't want that juice to oxidize too much. Once the fermentation's rolling, there's carbon dioxide naturally coming off that fermentation that will protect the wine. There you go. Method to the madness. At least I like to think so. And the wines turn out pretty good, in my humble opinion. So all those are fired up. They're getting ready to go. Actually, as I'm recording this, in a couple of hours, I'm going to go back out to the winery, check on them. We're now pulling our two-a-days, people. Every morning, every night, we're checking on fermentations and making sure everything is going swimmingly. So this is where the harvest season starts to take its toll. As the months go on or weeks go on through harvest, you know you're going to be operating and working with wines, you know, morning and night, basically. And in between, during the day, you're processing fruit and crushing things, doing pump overs, all kinds of stuff. And at night, you're picking grapes. Yeah, like there are 4 main inputs coming in during this harvest season, which is why us winemakers look haggard by the end of it. And we love it. The pain is good. We enjoy it. That's why we get these really sleek, like new haircuts. Got my harvest haircut this morning. It's a little bit like Inglourious Bastards, like Aldo Raine-y. Maybe not exactly what I was going for, but we'll let it ride. We'll let it ride for the season. It's not so bad. But yeah, but it's like once you shave down the sides, I'm a lot more aerodynamic, which means I can run around the cellar a lot more efficiently. So less wind resistance. That's what we're going for. You know what I mean? But from here, you know, when this first lot comes in, it is literally kind of just to test the waters, make sure that everything's kind of up running, all the equipment's clean, kind of ready to go. Our next lot's probably going to come in next week, maybe the week after. And it's going to be kind of, right now, it's looking like it's going to be just kind of a gradual build for us. I don't think everything is going to come in all at once. We are picking a little bit less fruit this year 2023 was such a big year in terms of how much wine we made. We're making a little bit less wine this year. Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot less, but less in general, because we figure we're going to have a lot of these 2023s to go around. So just to help balance that off, we've backed that off a little bit this year, just to kind of, you know, not be overburdened with too much wine. That kills a lot of wine businesses, is just continuing to ramp up production for no good reason. And, you know, with a little bit of a slower year tourism wise and wine sales wise, it's like, yeah, let's not get in too deep here. Let's try and pump the brakes just a little tap on the brakes, just slow things down a little bit. That way we know we'll be all ready to rock and roll come, you know, when these wines are released, and not have to worry about the amount of inventory we have. Got to practice those inventory controls, people, 100%. And that's been the last 2 weeks. It's been crazy. I feel, talking about it just doesn't do it justice. It's one of those things, like if for those friends of ours that have helped us out in the cellar, that have seen me kind of work through a bottling run, it is those moments where once you see like a lot of the hard work, and many of you who are big wine fans, been to Napa, know a lot about the industry, it's like once you see some of the hard work that actually goes into winemaking, it's hard to complain about how expensive a bottle of wine is, because you're like, I get it. Like it's a lot of work. And people are pouring their heart and souls into this product so that hopefully we can bottle it and have other people enjoy it, you know, as kind of this art form. So it's crazy. It's crazy. I'm definitely a little zonked. I'm a little tired. I'm going to go hit the gym in a little bit though. I got to like just clear the mind a little bit. I'm just beat. I'm beat. It was a lot of fun though. It's a ton of fun. Super stoked for, given the issues that 2022 could have had as a vintage, super stoked with where those wines turned out. Very, very happy with them. For all intents and purposes, given a couple of little hiccups with our first day of harvest, which was a very light one. 2 tons is like, oh, it's so nice. It's like the perfect way to start. It's, you know, we were up and out and moving, you know, around 4:30 a.m. You know, I probably got done with the day around like 6:30 or so. It was a long day considering just a little bit of fruit, but oh, it was a beautiful day yesterday getting it all done. It's amazing how much time it takes to deal with like 2 tons of fruit. You're like, oh, that's not that much. Still, it took us, I 100% will tell you this, it took me longer to set up and clean everything and then break everything down and clean it again. It took me three times as long to do that than it did to actually like process the fruit. Though that is a little tough. When you spend most of your time like cleaning and doing everything, you're just a glorified janitor for a day for like what is basically 2 hours of work. You're like, ugh, this sucks. Because I spent probably, you know, 3 hours or so cleaning the press, getting all the hoses, all the lines set up, getting the forklift ready, making sure like all the logistics were dialed in. You know, we finally get the grapes there, it goes into the press. It's about a 2 hour pressing cycle. From there, I got to spend another 2-3 hours cleaning and putting stuff away. And it's just like, oh, we did 6 hours of cleaning for 2 hours of work. That's cool. Awesome. That's really cool. That's my favorite. Make wine, they said. It would be fun, they said. And they were right. They are 100% right. That'll do it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed the journey of the end of one vintage and starting another throughout this episode. I'm hoping that this is one of those episodes. There are certain ones that I hope like spur some questions for our Q&A, and I try and do them the week before our Q&A to make sure that we have some good fodder from you all. So be sure to head to our website, mtjwines.com. If you have any questions, want to submit them for our monthly Q&As, you can do so on the homepage just by scrolling down and finding that little email form. You can also slide into any of our DMs on our social networks at mtjawines. That's on the YouTube, the Book of Face, the social network formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram. We are on those four things. Outside of that, have a great rest of your week. Have a great day, rest of your week, weekend, all the things. We will be back here next week with the August question and answer episode to wrap up the month. Cheers.